Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. And if you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter at goforitgant. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at goforitgant. And if you have something to say, make sure you email me at goforit.gant@gmail.com. Jam-packed show for you today. Expected to be joined by a boxer and junior welterweight contender Devin Alexander, who's going to talk about his last fight with Lucas Matisse. Also, defensive back for the Tennessee Titans, Courtland Finnegan, will stop by. He's going to talk about his season and what's going on with him in this offseason. Also, free agent linebacker Cato June will stop by, and we're going to get Cato's thoughts on what's going on with him and seeing how his return is coming. And hopefully Cato can get back into the National Football League last year. He spent time last year in the UFL, but hopefully he gets another opportunity for the NFL. And also actor, one of the stars of Avatar, James Pitt, will stop on by, and he's going to talk about Avatar, and he's also going to talk about some new things he has in the works. So make sure you stick and stay around for his show. It's jam-packed. We've got a lot of people, and hopefully you're going to stay with us, and hopefully you will enjoy what we have to offer, and I know you will. But I want to start right now, and to me, one of the big stories today coming out of the National Football League is James Harrison for the Pittsburgh Steelers, an interview that he had with Men's Journal in their August issue. James had some very interesting things to say, and he called Roger Goodell, among other things, a crook, a devil, and he had an interesting quote. He stated that if that man was on fire and I had to piss him out, I wouldn't do it. I hate him, and I will never respect him. And that's James Harrison. That's how he feels about Commissioner Roger Goodell. And, wow. I mean, I would like to think, James, that if Commissioner Goodell was on fire and the only thing you had to save him was piss, I'd like to think that you would do something to save Roger Goodell. But, I mean, that's the way he is, so that's what he says. But he also has some interesting comments about some of his teammates. I mean, it's one thing to rip into Roger Goodell, but it's another thing to rip into your teammates, and he ripped into his teammates. He ripped into Rashard Mendenhall, called the man a fumble machine. It was funny. Mendenhall responded on his Twitter page. He sent his statistics. He showed his statistics and said he only fumbled three times, I believe. So it's kind of funny, but I mean, it's funny. The whole situation is funny, but James Harrison also came out on Ben Roethlisberger, and he said that, you know, he needs to hand the ball off and stop trying to act like Peyton Manning. You ain't that. You know it, man. You just get paid like he does. And he was talking about Roethlisberger's interceptions in that Super Bowl, his two interceptions in the Super Bowl. And so a lot of interesting comments by James Harrison. And Harrison actually said, and don't they all say this, but I was actually misquoted in my comments. I was misquoted in my comments. And he actually said that the interview did take place in April or May, and that, you know, it pretty much was misquoted. And they all say it when it all comes down. But the thing is, I mean, he criticized a lot of people in there, Rodney Harrison, Teddy Bruschi, Brian Cushion called him a juiced up, called him juiced up out of his mind. I mean, the guy just went in and ripped everybody. He just ripped everybody a new one in this article. And you know, it's one thing to go after Commissioner Goodell. And you guys are in a labor disagreement at this point. But it's another thing to go after your teammates. And how do you, if you're Mendenhall, if you're Roethlisberger, you go into the locker room and you see this guy, how do you respond to him? How do you respond to him? And Harrison has said that he talked to Roethlisberger about everything in this situation. But, I mean, it's, you know, guys sometimes have to learn that less is more. And with James Harrison, he runs off with the mouth. And, you know, it's going to get him in trouble. And this situation might have gotten him in some trouble with his teammates. You know, it might have gotten him into some trouble with his teammates. And if you're his teammates, how do you respond to that? How do you, you know what, this guy just called me out in this magazine. This guy called me out in this magazine. Called me out. Called me out big time in this magazine. And I think it all comes down to this. There's lockouts going on. There's a lockout going on. And guys, for whatever reason, just have a lot of time on their hand. And when you have that time on your hand, you tend to do some stupid things and say some stupid things and act in stupid ways. I mean, they say the idle mind is a devil's playground. In this situation, that may be true. James Harrison, I mean, the guy, he's public enemy number one. In a lot of ways, I mean, every time James Harrison's involved in any type of questionable hit, it may cost him money. It may cost him a lot of money. So, I mean, he lost a lot of money last year because of those hits, those helmet first hits and those, I mean, he slammed Vince Young game one. And he did a lot of things. I mean, and it cost him $100,000, $100,000. I mean, that's a lot of money. And it was funny, the picture he had up, he had a cover holding two pistols. And, you know, I mean, and then the way he was talking about Roger Goodell, I mean, that's not really good symbolism there. Two pistols, and you're talking about if Roger Goodell was on fire, you wouldn't even piss on him? I mean, if the guy was on fire, you wouldn't even piss on him? Jeez, I mean, that's some tough stuff there. That's some hate. That's some venom. But my concern in this whole situation is how his teammates will react to this. How his teammates will react. And Mendenhall responded. He basically said he didn't take offense to his comments, to Harrison's comments. He didn't take offense to him. And I guess he knows who James Harrison is. He knows what type of guy he is. And James Harrison, I mean, if he has an opinion, he's going to give you his opinion. Love it, hate it, or what have you. He's going to give you his opinion. My only concern, if I'm a Steelers fan, is how the locker room is going to handle this and how the locker room responds to this and how they respond to Harrison moving forward. You know, and this is a guy who, and you got to, I guess at the same time, you got to kind of take some of the things he says that you got to question some of the things. This is a guy, same guy who talked about possibly retiring because of the fines he was getting for the hits that he was putting on guys. And so, you know, you got to take everything he says maybe with a grain of salt. But at the same time, he didn't, you know, he ripped other guys, but he never really ripped into his teammates the way he ripped into his teammates in this magazine article. Again, you got a lockout. Guys have a lot of time on their hands. I don't mind. It's the devil's playground. And in this situation, this may be very, very, very true. So we'll get your thoughts on James Harrison and this whole situation. Did he cross the line here? Did he cross the line here is the question. And I say yes, he did cross the line here. And, you know, I mean, it's one thing to hate somebody, but it's another thing to say somebody was laying on the ground on fire. You wouldn't even piss on him. You wouldn't even piss on the guy. That's crazy. But it is what it is. We're going to be joined shortly now by 140-pound contender Devin Alexander, and we're definitely interested to get his thoughts on his last fight and what's new and what's going on for him, because there's been talk that he's moving up in weight, and we're definitely going to get his thoughts now, and we're going to bring him in now. Let's bring in now 140-pound contender, Mr. Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you, sir?
What's going on, my friend?
Not too much. Good to have you. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for having me once again.
And Devin, I want to go to the fight. And when I watched the fight, Devin, it seemed like when you boxed Matisse, you had the advantage. But it seemed like you kind of got away from it. And it's almost like you kind of wanted to prove some things after the Bradley fight. Was that the case here?
Well, you know, I did want to show people that I can stand there and I can bang with a person if I have to. But with that saying, you know, I've been fighting 140 pounds since I was 15. And, you know, in that fight, my legs wasn't all the way there, so I couldn't box as good as I wanted to. So I had to do what I had to do to pull the win out, which was, you know, try to do what I can to win. So my legs was kind of stiff, and, you know, this time around trying to make 140 was the hardest I ever tried to make 140, you know. So that's why we were moving up to 147.
And you are going to 147. And you are going to 147, but there seems to be a lot of money at 140 right now with Judah Khan. And so there seems to be a lot of money there. I mean, there's no way you can get down to 140, or it's just something you have to do?
Well, it's definitely, you know, a consideration. You know, we just got to see what my team thinks, but, you know, I'm almost 80% that we are going to move up to 147. Because I've been at 40, you know, since I was in the jail, Dream Olympics. So we just going to have to see. And plus, I'm growing to my man's strength. I'm getting bigger. You know, I added strength training to my regimen. And, you know, I just feel the difference now, you know, trying to make 140 is definitely harder.
And in this fight, Devin, you were dropped for the first time in your career. Kind of take us through that experience and kind of what you learned from it.
Well, you know, I think it was just a flash for me. It was a flash, and I was bouncing, and then he caught me with a, you know, shot, you know, and I fell. You know, it was a flash knockdown, but it definitely wasn't a pleasant experience because that was my first eight count ever. I never experienced that, you know, so it's definitely not a good feeling. But it was okay. I got right back up and, you know, continued to fight. I wasn't hurt. I wasn't dazed or anything. It was just a flash for me.
And in this fight, Demi, you took a lot of big shots training with Matisse, and you kept coming, and I was impressed with your chin, man. Talk about that.
Yeah. you know, that's the thing with me. I always had a pretty, pretty nice chin, you know. So I'm glad of that, because in this sport, you definitely need that, you know. So, you know, it's just something I had since I was amateur. I never been hurt, you know. I've been hit with good shots, but never dazed, like, into the point where I have to, you know, recuperate or give an eight count. I never got an eight count. I never, you know, even been that seriously hurt. So I got a pretty good chin, as you said.
And were you ever hurt by Matisse's, any of his bombs?
You know, he got some power to him. You know, he's probably the hardest puncher that I ever fought. You know, he does have some power to him. You know, his punches didn't hurt as much as people thought. But, you know, what it is, he has some good body shots. He definitely has some good body shots.
Right. And the body shots seem to hurt you a little bit.
I mean, out of my, you know, career, you know, he's definitely been probably the first one to, you know, actually make me feel a body shot.
And many believe, fair or unfair, that Matisse should have gotten the decision. I actually gave you the fight by one point. But what do you say to those people who say that Lucas Matisse was the real winner?
Well, it was a good fight, you know. You know, I think it could have went anyway, but I think I pulled it out. You know, at the end, I started boxing real well. you know, the ninth round I came out stronger, way stronger. And in the beginning rounds, I thought I won the beginning rounds too. So I definitely know I pulled it out. You know, I ain't had no doubt about that. I definitely knew it was a close fight with the judges. So, but I definitely pulled it out. You know, the people that's saying it's probably looking at the power of shots that was landed, and they're not looking at the actual skill that took to pull the victory out. So that could be why he's saying it.
We're talking to Devin Alexander, junior welterweight title contender. And Devin, during this fight, a lot was made of your loud grunts by the HBO broadcasting team after throwing punches. Is that something that is just kind of a habit for you?
Yeah, it's a habit. It's a habit, that just stick with me. And, you know, I brought it to the pro game. And, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it, I guess, you know. So, I don't know. I don't think too much of it. You know, I think a lot of people grunts, but, you know, I never thought anything about it.
Right. It was, and after the fight, we talked about it. You are moving up to 147. It was revealed by your manager, Kevin Cunningham, that you are moving up to 147. How excited are you to go up to 147?
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited because, you know, I know I'm going to be stronger, and I'm going to be able to eat like I want to eat, you know, eat comfortably, you know, and I'm definitely going to have the legs and the power up there. You know, I actually grew a couple of inches, too, you know, in the last year or so. I grew a couple of inches, you know, so I'm definitely going to be comfortable there at 147, I think, and I'm definitely looking to make a statement there.
And you fought in your hometown for the second time. First time, you talked about you had some nervousness the first time you fought in your hometown against Kotelnik. But I didn't get the sense that you felt that way this time around. But did you feel that way?
No. I didn't feel that way at all, you know. I know I'm used to fighting in big fights. And, you know, no pressure is on me to go out there and, you know, overhype or overextend myself. So, you know, I'm kind of used to the home crowd now. So that's not an excuse.
And we talked about it. You're going up to 147. And your manager, Kevin Cunningham, talked about wanting Paulie Malignaggi, a guy who's been talking a lot of trash about you, and actually said that you were screaming like a little girl during their last fight, referring to the grunting. You want a piece of Malignaggi, obviously, right, sir?
Well, you know, Paulie Malignaggi, he's been coming, you know, from not even from the last fight, for fights before that, you know, and he's just been on my coattail, you know. So I guess, you know, he got his wish, you know. So we're gonna see what happens with that, you know, and see if his talk is gonna do the fighting for him. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's going to be a good hype fight. You know, I know he's going to talk trash, but I'm ready.
and speaking of that, there's a big fight July 23rd. Zab Judah, Amir Khan. Who you got in that fight?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because, you know, Judah has a puncher's chance, I think. And no, I think Khan's not going to sit there and just try to, you know, bang with him. So I think Khan's going to outbox him. But if, you know, Judah can catch him, then he definitely has a puncher's chance.
You got a prediction?
It's definitely not going to be an easy fight for Khan. Definitely not. So I'll have to see. But I don't have a prediction on that one. That one's kind of hard to say. That one definitely is kind of hard to say because you never know what Zab you're going to get.
And Devin, you got a new home now in the St. Charles area. First off, congrats on that. Tell us about the new crib.
Oh, man, the new crib is going good, man. I'm just, you know, doing nicks and nacks right now. But the crib is definitely nice, you know. It definitely feels good to come into your own that you know that it's yours. You're not renting. You're not, you know, have to come to a landlord or anything. You know, and you actually own it, you know. And in my case, only right now, I got my deed to my house. I didn't, you know, take out a loan or anything like that. I paid cash for it. I want to make sure I keep this house forever. So, you know, it feels good. I'm blessed, you know, and I'm happy to be have my own home, so the house is good.
So talk about it. I mean, how many bedrooms we got there?
We got five bedrooms, and we got three and a half baths. So the finished basement. So I'm living pretty good. You gotta come down, and you know I got a pool table. We gotta shoot some pool. You know?
Definitely. Next time I'm in the Lou, I definitely want to come through and see that beautiful house you got there.
Yeah, you gotta come through.
I mean, you got
by the time you come, it'll be fully furnished.
So you just moved in?
Yeah, I've been there. Actually, I first moved in February, but I had to go to camp, you know, for this fight. So I haven't had a chance to be there a long time. So I've been there about 5 months now.
Okay. Yeah. And, Devin, on the show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two names. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
My man.
Devin, who's better? Better home, Floyd Mayweather Jr. or Devin Alexander?
definitely Floyd. You know, Floyd got a monster career, so I got to say, definitely got to say Floyd. But you know what? I'm going to be there.
Better city, St. Charles, Missouri, or St. Louis, Missouri?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know. If people from St. Louis are going to hear this or St. Charles are going to hear this because that could be controversial. But you know what? I'm from St. Louis. You know, I definitely love St. Louis. I got to say St. Louis because that's where my roots at. That's where I'm from. So
let's just say you weren't from St. Louis. What would be this better city?
I'll definitely say St. Charles.
St. Charles.
Definitely.
Better looking.
More quiet.
Venus.
Better.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Better looking, Venus or Serena Williams?
I got to say Serena. You know, I mean, I don't like a tall girl, you know. I don't like a skinny girl either, so, you know, that's just me. So I have to
and
say,
always.
Serena.
I always said about Serena, I mean, she's about a 7 in the face, but her body's like a 13. So
right,
7 plus 13 is 20 divided by 2. So I'll give her dime status because of her body.
Right. But, you know, she ain't, you know, all in the face. I ain't saying that far.
No.
But yeah.
No. And lastly, better boxer, Paulie Malignaggi. Or Devin Alexander?
Oh, we talking apples and oranges here. I got to say, Devin Alexander is great on that one. I got better speed and more power.
And hopefully that fight happens. A lot of trash talking going on, and be interesting to see. So at this point, Devin, you're just going to be relaxing and laying low for a little bit?
Yeah, I'm definitely just going to take a vacation. I'm supposed to be going to St. Thomas, so I'm just going to take a vacation, and you know I can't stay away from boxing too long, so I'm going to just take a couple months off then back at it.
And your promotional contract is actually up with Don King. Is any movement on that front in terms of where you want to go and who?
Yeah, you know, I can't. Talk to me after August, the beginning of August. I'll tell you about it. You know I can't talk about it, you know, too much, but, you know. You know, I'm going to give you the lowdown.
All right, beginning of August, I'll come for you for the lowdown.
Definitely.
Devin, we always appreciate you stopping by, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with your new home, your vacation. Man, enjoy it all, and can't wait to see you back in the ring. Good luck, Devin.
I appreciate it, my man.
Take care.
Okay.
Devin Alexander, 140-pound contender. Actually, I should say 147-pound contender because Devin is moving on up like George and Weezy. He plans on moving up to 147. He just can't make 140 anymore. If you saw the fight in the corner, it seemed like there were some issues with his legs. And he just didn't have the legs. And he didn't have the legs in the Katelnik fight down the stretch. He didn't have the legs in this fight down the stretch. And like you said, 140 pounds, he can't make the weight anymore. So with that being said, since he can't make the weight anymore, he's going to have to do something else, and that means he's going to have to move up, and that's moving up to 147. And he actually grew a couple inches. That was pretty interesting. I thought you stopped growing at the age of 21, but he's 23, and he's still growing, still getting bigger, stronger, and for his sake, hopefully better. But, I mean, it should be interesting to see how he does at 147. And, again, I would love to see him against Malignaggi. Those two, especially Malignaggi, have been talking a lot of trash about each other. And more so Malignaggi than Devin. But, I mean, it should be interesting to see what happens there, see if these two will actually get in the ring together. They're doing a lot of talking, so that would be interesting to see those two, Paul Malignaggi and Devin Alexander. I want to switch gears now to Dez Bryant and his situation. Deion Sanders, Dez Bryant's former mentor, made some very critical comments about Dez Bryant, and talking about essentially that the Cowboys are concerned, a lot of people are concerned. And he basically says that, you know, Dez Bryant, he needs no men in his life, not yes men. He feels like at this point Dez has a lot of yes men in his life, and he needs some no men. And everybody does need no men in their life, and people to just say no, and people to just say, you know, you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong. And Deion and Dez, they were close, and Deion was his mentor at one point, but for whatever reason, they had a falling out. And now Dez Bryant is Deion Sanders, or for whatever reason, it seems like they're really not on the best of terms. And the way I look at it, and the way I look at this whole situation, I mean, yes, you do need no men in your life. Yes, Deion Sanders is a good mentor to have, a guy who's been in the league for a long time, a guy who knows the ins and outs of the National Football League, and a guy who's experienced a lot of things in the National Football League. It's good to have a mentor. It's good to definitely have a mentor. But I have one issue with Deion here in this particular situation. I don't think Deion should have went public like that, what he did. I mean, I don't think he should have did that. He told this to an Atlanta radio station. I don't think he shouldn't have done that. I don't think he should have done that. I really don't think he should have talked about Bryant like that on a radio station in public like that. That's a situation where I think you take the guy aside and talk to the guy and tell the guy, you know what, that there are some issues going on, and tell the guy that, you know what, you need this and that in your life. And, you know, I think that's what he should have did. I don't like the way Deion handled this particular situation. And I just don't think Deion should have, you know, put this out in public. I mean, if I'm trying to help an individual, and maybe Deion knows the guy better than I do. Maybe Deion felt, you know what, if I go public with this, maybe this will have this guy look at himself and take a deeper look at himself. Maybe. But the way I see it, and I understand, the way Deion feels and his opinion, he's entitled to his opinion, but the way I see it is, that is something, if you're going to criticize a guy, that is something you want to do privately. Because in doing so, you could really affect his situation. You really could, and you know, it could affect his endorsements and whatnot. I mean, a guy, if you're Deion Sanders, you're coming out and you're talking about this guy, and you're saying that this guy, you know, has some issues, and that, you know, the Cowboys are concerned, and he's concerned, you know, I mean, you don't do that, I don't think. I don't think you do that in public. I don't think you go on the radio and do that. I just don't think so. Just my opinion. I understand what Deion is trying to do here. I understand what Deion is trying to do here, but at the same time, does Deion Sanders have an axe to grind? Does he have an axe to grind with Dez Bryant? I mean, is there a little axe to grind here? I don't know. But I know this. He said what he said about Dez Bryant, and Dez Bryant actually responded to Deion, and, you know, he said, and here's his quotes, I know everybody is entitled to their own opinion. In my eyes, I feel like the Cowboys have nothing to worry about. I'm getting everything done like I'm supposed to do, and I'm ready to go out and play football and do what I do best, and do what he does best is play football. I mean, Dez Bryant had a great rookie season. And there was also some things going on. There was, you know, Dez Bryant had some issues, a little running with the police in the shopping mall. And he also had an issue with some unpaid jewelry. And, you know, I heard Herman Edwards say this, and when he was talking to the rookies, you know, you need just one of everything, one piece of jewelry, one girlfriend, one car, probably one house. You need just one of any of everything, and that's some great, great advice. Great advice. I mean, one of everything. You never go wrong with just one of everything. When you start having all these different things, and, you know, you kind of run into some issues or run into some problems. And Dez Bryant right now, I mean, he's a guy with a lot of talent. He has a lot of talent, a whole lot of talent, a whole lot of ability. And hopefully the guy can get it right and off the field, and so it won't affect him on the field. Hopefully he can get it right. And one of the reasons Deion apparently stopped working to him is working with Dez, and he said that Dez lied to him. And so I don't know what he lied to him about. You know, it's really none of my business. But apparently Dez lied to Deion. And lying to Deion was not very happy, and apparently that's why they ended their relationship. Again, my only problem with this situation is this. You don't do this in public, I don't think. I don't think you do this in public. This is something you maybe talk to a friend and kind of pass a message along, or maybe you even yourself, you bury the hatchet on whatever level and decide to talk to Dez Bryant yourself. Maybe you do that. Maybe you do that. But, again, at this point, Deion sees some problems here, sees some possible issues with Dez Bryant. And, you know, I mean, hopefully Dez can get this thing right. Hopefully he can get this thing right. I mean, I said it before and I'll say it again. A whole heck of a lot of ability. Dez Bryant does have a lot of ability. The guy can flat out get it done. And I was very impressed with what I saw last year from Dez Bryant. Very impressed. Very impressed what I saw from this guy. The guy has a lot of ability, and the guy got it done last year as a rookie. Injured a lot, but when he was on the field, the guy was impressive. I was very, very impressed by what I saw. Very impressed. But hopefully Dez Bryant, again, can get it right. And switching gears to the lockout now, it's looking like the lockout could be near the end, and that's a good thing. Apparently the sides are moving closer and closer to a deal. At this point, there seems to be one sticking point. That seems to be the rookie wage scale and the rookie contracts. But if they can get over that, and that's something I think they could get over, that's not a big, big stumbling block in my opinion. Hopefully they can get it over. And they're looking at a July 21st, and that's what reports are looking, July 21st, date for ratification of a new collective bargaining agreement. And that would essentially be able to open training camps on time. And that Hall of Fame game, which is August 6th, that may be in limbo. But at least there will be time for teams to kind of make moves with the free agents, and that's going to be a flurry, and that's going to be a mad dash and a mad rush. But hopefully teams will have an opportunity to get that right with free agency. Teams will have an opportunity to open camp on time, and teams will have an opportunity to play preseason football. So, I mean, hopefully that all get taken care of. But I said before once this whole thing started, that this whole situation would get sorted out. I've said that from day one, that no games would be missed. And I could be wrong if the Hall of Fame game is missed, but no regular season games would be missed, and nothing really big would be missed. You know, and the reality is that's what's probably going to happen. I mean, everybody talks the talk and all this other mess about, you know, we want this done and that done, and, you know, we want this and that, and they were far apart. But at the same time, I knew, that no games would be missed. Both sides would be foolish to miss games. Both sides would be very foolish to miss games. That would be stupid. That would be dumb. That would be asinine. But as it looks right now, looks like a deal is imminent. It looks like a deal is imminent. Can't talk all of a sudden. But it looks like a deal is near. And hopefully, hopefully, football will be played. And we can get back to talking about free agency. We can get back to talking about all the good stuff. And talk about on-the-field stuff. And talk about where Plaxico Burress is going to go. Talk about that kind of stuff. Not this nonsense. Not this nonsense. Not this $9 billion and how to split it up and all this other junk. We can talk about some good stuff. Talk about some important stuff. Talk about what's going to happen on the field. On the field. And then on the field, we're excited for what may happen because it looks like the agreement is near, a deal is imminent, and both sides hopefully will be happy and everybody will be happy and football will be back. It will be back. Really, it never really left because no games have been missed. So technically, it really never left. It really never left. But it's going to be exciting times when we can start talking about what is going on the field, what's happening on the field, how are guys doing on the field. The field, the field, the field is what we need to start talking about. What's going on the field? That's the important stuff. Hopefully in the next few weeks we won't be talking about this lockout mess. And we'll be talking about where's Tiki Barber going to go? What's going to happen with Tiki? Again, what's going to happen with Kevin Cobb in Philadelphia? Who does Kevin Cobb get traded to? Does he get traded? Do the Eagles keep him? What's going to happen with Albert Haynesworth? What's going to happen with Donovan McNabb? Do the Redskins trade him? Do the Redskins release him? Do the Redskins keep him? You know, all these things should be very interesting to see what happens with all these things. And I'm looking forward to this situation. And I hope, and I realize that. It's not really hope. Let's be honest. I'm gonna put it out there. There will be an agreement in place very, very shortly. And this always happens with any type of agreement. It always happens in that 11th hour where guys finally realize that something could be truly lost, and guys get off their duff, and guys start to make a deal happen, and guys start to give some concessions, and guys start to ultimately strike a deal. And that's what this whole thing is about, striking a deal. A deal, a deal, a deal. Let's strike the deal, and let's get this done, and let's play football, because I'm ready for some football. And I'm sure everybody out here is truly ready for some football. We all love football. We all love football. And I think we're all ready to see football being played again. And I think when it's all said and done in the next few weeks, football will be back. It will be back. It will be back. They have it. The crowd's going crazy. The crowd is going wild because they realize that football will be back very, very, very shortly. And another interesting thing that came out recently, Michael Irvin, he appears shirtless on the cover of a popular gay magazine called Out. And in this magazine, Michael Irvin talks about his brother, who was a homosexual, and talked about how, in his life, how that affected his situation, and how, you know, when that happened in his life, how, you know, it kind of made him become a womanizer. But we'll get back to that shortly.
Hey, what up? It's Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pizzerica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank you, sir.
We're going to be joined very shortly now by Tennessee Titans defensive back Courtland Finnegan. And actually, Courtland's joining us now. We're being joined by Titans defensive back Courtland Finnegan. Courtland, how are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm very good. Thank you.
And thanks for coming on. It's greatly appreciated. Courtland, day 124 of this lockout. The end is in sight. How excited are you with the possible end of this lockout?
You got to love it. I mean, you know, you get a chance to, you know, do something you love, and I know it's gonna be a rough ride for us, you know, having to learn a whole new scheme on offense and defense and with a new quarterback. But we'll take all this, you know, negativity, so to speak, and use it as a positive for us. But it's gonna be a good thing to get back to work, man. I'm excited.
And speaking of that, I mean, you do have a new coach, so therefore you're gonna have to learn a new system, and you talked about that. But a lot of people believe that teams that are learning new systems are going to be a little bit behind. You feel that way?
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to do an accelerated start, I mean, from the jump. And, you know, then free agency comes into the mix. I mean, there's so many things that work against you in trying to go ahead and learn a new scheme because you don't know who's coming, who's going, and, you know, just the scheme and who holds out. There's so many variables that factor into it. So it's going to be a tough start.
And do you feel like that could affect your situation? You guys maybe get off to a bad start because of it?
No, I never think we can get off to a bad start, man. We play the game to win the game first. You know how that goes. You know, I think it'd be some growing pains along the way. And I really think
right.
That's for the most part, you know, having a rookie quarterback, if so to be the start, and then, you know, learning a new offense and defense. I mean, we're definitely behind the eight ball, but by no means, you know, we're going to go into the game thinking we're underprepared, because we're going to be very prepared. It's just going out there and executing.
And Courtland, like we said, there is a lockout. Therefore, no OTAs, no mini camps. How different of an off season has this been for you?
Oh, man, it's been so different. I mean, the fact that, you know, by now you'd have already had, you know, 12, 14 practices of the new defense. You'd have went one-on-ones. You'd have done 7-on-7. You've been able to get yourself ready to play football. And I don't think you can really duplicate that, you know, on your own. I mean, you can work out with other guys on other teams or on your team. But I really think it hurt us so bad as an organization, the NFL as a whole, just the fact that we couldn't have those organized mini camps, man. I think that that puts players behind, you know, and that's the reality of it, but it stinks.
And your new coach, Mike Munchak, longtime assistant, what does Mike kind of bring to the table? Have you dealt with him? I know he was on the offensive side of the ball. Have you dealt with him much?
No, I haven't dealt with him much, but I know he's a no-nonsense kind of guy. I mean, he's going to take some of Fisher, but he's going to definitely add his own twist to it. I mean, from you know, just talking to guys that have already, you know, when we've been locked out, you know, people that actually work there said, you know, he's got guys in collar shirts and slacks. I mean, he runs a tight ship, man. So I think it's going to be a no-nonsense kind of approach to it. But and we're going to run the football. You better believe that.
Talking to Courtland Finnegan, defensive back, Tennessee Titans. And Courtland, last year, Vince Young, Jeff Fisher, for whatever reason, those guys were not on the same page. Did it affect you guys on the field, you think?
I mean, I think there were a lot of variables that were, you know, were working against us last year. That was probably the tipping point of it all. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, both of them have parted ways, man. Fish, I love to death, man. Great coach, great guy, gave me a shot. I think Vince will land on his feet, man. You know, this game will humble each and every one of us in some form or fashion. And I think that, you know, he's gonna land on his feet, which is a good part about all of that.
And Courtland, you're a tough, hard-nosed type of player. And you were a seventh-round draft pick out of Samford. And I get the sense, Courtland, that because of that, you kind of have that extra chip on your shoulder, and you almost have to kind of prove yourself in a lot of ways, because let's be honest, a lot of seventh-round draft picks get cut. Kind of talk about that.
You know that I just wanted to get my foot in the door first and foremost. And you know, as any draft pick, you got to play special teams. You got to be willing to do it all. And that was my whole mentality. And I think that, you know, even a lot of my play, of my passion and my love for the game is overshadowed by what happened with me and Andre Johnson. And I try to tell people that I love the game and I'm so passionate about it that kind of stuff happens. But when you take me off the field, I love to have fun and, you know, very polite. It's just, you know, those things get misconstrued through the media. But I just love the game. I love the game of football and what it means to me and the people who set, you know, the bar way before me, you know, the Steel Curtain, the Greens of the world, you know, the Atwaters. Right. I mean, those guys really set the bar, and they play physical football, and that's what I like to play.
And, Courtland, you've gotten a label of being a dirty player. Is Courtland Finnegan a dirty player?
No, I mean – Listen, I play to the whistle and maybe a few seconds after, man. But I'm just passionate. I love the game. I'm usually the smallest guy out there. I'm not going to take crap from anybody. I just like to throw my body around and so-called be reckless. I mean, there'd be a lot of guys in the NFL, but I think I get the dirtiest player rap because I sort of asked for that. And that's something I'll never do again because Hines Ward was number one and I was number six. And then somehow it got misconstrued to me that I want to be number one. So I think when you say you want to be something, people sort of put that behind you and you just got to live with it. And let's just say I wish I would have never done that.
And, Courtland, you did reference the Andre Johnson situation. That was a straight-up brawl out there. I mean, were you surprised that it got to that point?
You know, I really was, man. You know, like, you know, people, you know, say what they want, but I mean – I just never thought that, you know, somebody, you know, I would have never punched a guy with his helmet off and or vice versa. But, you know, I really feel like he really was at a point where, you know, he was fed up. But at the same time, he didn't know what I was going to do to him because, you know, I'm unpredictable, so to speak, in a lot of ways. And I guess, you know, it's, you know, fight or flight. And he had to defend himself first. And he got the best of me as far as that goes. But I smiled and winked about it. So at the end of the day, hurt. So, but no, man, you know, I respect Dre. He's one of the best players in the NFL. Let's not get that misconstrued,
right,
man. I have a lot of respect for him. I've apologized to him. You know, I want to apologize to the city of Houston as well, man. You know, I'm not that dirty player. I'm so passionate about what I do. I think that's overlooked.
And so will Dre get a Christmas card from you?
No, no, he won't get a Christmas card from me, man. Get my mama's sweet soup, you know, I guess, you know, pie recipe, but he definitely won't get no Christmas card.
All right. On this show, Courtland, we like to play a game called Who's Better. You ready to play?
Let's go.
Better meal, chicken and yams or ham and yams?
You already know it's ham and yams. Come on, now don't do that.
Better point guard, Russell Westbrook or Courtland Finnegan?
Hey, hands down, man, down. If they shooting, I'm getting down. Russell Westbrook. Hey, but check this out, man. Look, I respect that dude so much and the scrutiny that he took. Man, I'm a fan of his all day long. I want to play him one-on-one. Like, just for charity, let's donate to his charity, my charity. I just want to see, you know, I really want to do it, you know, befriend him, but I definitely want to play him one-on-one.
Westbrook, if you're out there, Courtland wants you one-on-one. Let's make it happen.
Best for charity, baby.
Better city, Nashville, Tennessee, or Milton, Florida?
I got to go with Nashville, baby.
Milton, Florida is your hometown.
I love my hometown, but I can't root against Nashville because it's a toss-up. Nashville and Milton together.
Now, Courtland, I mean, you do a lot of great things in the community, and I want to applaud you for that. You have a foundation, the ARC Foundation. Tell us a little bit about it.
I started it 2 years ago. It's called Acts of Random Kindness. We work with special needs and kids with disabilities in Middle Tennessee, and it's very partial to me because my sister died of Down syndrome, so we get to work hands-on with Special Olympics as well as the Vanderbilt Children's Hospital. Kids with leukemia and lymphoma, man. And it's a touching thing, you know, to see a kid going through chemo And because you play a sport or you play for the Titans, that, you know, they say that when you leave there, their mom says that's the most he smiled at. That's the first time he smiled in 2 weeks. I mean, that kind of stuff, man, you'll never be able to put in words, and it touches me to the core. And that's why I do what I do, man. I love playing football, but I love giving back.
And you do a great job of it. Keep it up. And any events coming up for you guys?
No events coming up. We always have my zoo day that we talk about. It's a kids' carnival day where we have kids come to the zoo. We do face paint and blow-ups, DJ. We do it the Saturday before a home game. And last year we had over 1,000 people come out. But I'll definitely stay tuned and let you know more about that.
And I know you do a little karaoke. You have a karaoke event for your charity. And let me play a song. You ready to start singing?
I haven't
drank
my lemon juice and warmed up my vocals at all yet.
We'll give you a pass on that one. Now, Cortland, where can we find out about this charity? Where's the website so everybody knows and everybody can go there and support it?
Okay, it's called ARK 31, A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, A-R-K. 31, my number, 31.org, A-R-K, www.ark31.org. And, you'll find out what all we got upcoming events and how to help and volunteer. And I think that's been the biggest why my foundation has been so great is the volunteers who spend countless hours, you know, marketing and getting out there. And every dime that we raise goes back into the community. So that's a blessing for me to be able to do that.
And, again, make sure everybody checks it out, ARK31.org. Check it out. Cortland Finnegan, he's doing a great job in the community. He's not a bad guy, everybody. He is not a bad guy, everybody. So just so we're clear. And he's just a passionate man. And he's a physical passionate man. He plays the game hard, and there's nothing wrong with that. Cortland, we wish you nothing but the best of luck going forward, sir. It was a pleasure talking to you, sir, and keep up the great work in the community, and good luck with the 2011 season.
All right, thank you, sir. You have a great and blessed day.
Take care.
Yes, sir.
Cortland Finnegan, defensive back, Tennessee Titans. Cortland, doing a lot of great things in the community, and that's a great thing. That is a great thing. And we need a lot of people. And I say this before, I said it before, and I say it all the time on the show. We always hear about the negatives. We never really focus on the positives that some of these athletes are doing. And Cortland Finnegan is doing a great job in the community, and that's a great thing. That's a very great thing. And we wish him nothing but the best of luck in the 2011 season and going forward. It was a pleasure talking to him, and he's a physical guy. He's a physical guy, and he plays hard and plays the game the right way. So Cortland Finnegan, a pleasure talking to him. We're going to be joined shortly now by Cato June, free agent linebacker. And Cato does a lot of great things to the community as well, so it should be interesting to hear his thoughts on what he does and you know, why he does what he does. And that's, you know, giving back. When you're blessed, it's good to give back to others who are less fortunate than you. And Cato June does that, and Cortland Finnegan does that as well. Let's bring in Cato June now, joined by free agent linebacker Cato June. Cato, how are you, sir? Hello? Hello? Cato? Guess we're having some technical difficulties there with Cato June, but we'll bring him in shortly. Again, he's a guy who does a lot of great work in the community. Him, Cortland Finnegan, a lot of other guys, they do a lot of great work in the community, and that's a great thing. It's good to help out your community. It's good to do those things in your community. It's very important. Very important to give back. Very, very important to give back. Very important to give back. The more you to whom much is given, much is expected, and it's very important. That's why it's very important for guys to get back. Let's bring in Cato June now. Cato? Cato?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, Cato, how are you, sir?
How's it going, man?
Doing well, doing well. Cato, let's get right into it. I mean, last season, you played for the Omaha Nighthawks of the UFL. Talk about the level of talent in the UFL.
You know what? The thing about it was we had a lot of, especially our team, man. I would say 80% of our team was guys that were 4 or 5 years in the league. They had, I would say, 4 or 5 years with league experience with, you know, some guys being 8, 9, 10, even, you know, you saw guys like Amon Green and Jeff Garcia with, you know their tenure. But like I said, man, it was a lot of guys who played a lot of football on our team. So the competition and the preparation was, you know, similar. Now, I wouldn't say the same because it's not the same, but it was a situation where you still could get, you know, some good football, man.
And at this point, you were released by Omaha. Do you envision going back to UFL, or you're thinking strictly NFL at this point?
Well, let's get one thing straight.
Okay.
You know, though, it's funny like how those contracts work, because you sign a 1 year deal, right? And
okay.
Then they can either retain your rights, whether you want to play or want to play with them or any, but they can retain your rights, so you can't even sign with another team if you wanted to. And then it's a funny business, I guess. If you know they feel like you're not going to play or not going to show up, then they could, you know, release you from that hold they have on you. So it's a situation where, you know, a lot of guys, you don't even know if you've been retained or, you know, if they have your rights or if you can go play with another team, if that's what you want to do. So, logistically, it's not as clear cut as people like to think. You know, all you know is, oh, you know, they got this, they signed this guy or they released this guy. But, you know, half the time you don't even know. Most guys don't even know they were drafted, including myself.
Okay. And now at this point, you're obviously looking to get back into the NFL.
Definitely. Never really wanted to leave, but, you know, certain situations, not being in camp last year, I thought it would be a good idea to go out there and, you know, at least be playing football. Because at the end of the day, you're playing football, you're moving around, you're playing against guys that are playing, you know, want to play at a high level, played at a high level. So being able to stay sharp in that way, because there's no real way to practice. You can't go out and practice and, you know,
right,
get guys together, go out and play pickup football. It just doesn't happen like that. So, you know, being able to do that in the meantime, per se, was a good fit.
Right. And right now, like we said, you are a free agent. The lockout is going on, so that kind of affects your situation on some level. How frustrating is this lockout for a guy like you?
Well, for a guy like me, I guess the frustrating part would be not knowing exactly, because, I mean, and you get to a certain point in your career, whereas, you know, either you're going to continue to, you know, play or try to play, or you're just going to, you know, move on to the next thing in your career, you know, the next career move for you, I should say. So with that said, you know, the frustrating part for me would be not knowing how it's going to play out. You know, it could be beneficial for me. It could be, you know, just a, you know, I won't say a waste of time, but, you know, a thing where, you know, it's just going to, it might where I'm trying to get back in might kind of pass you by. So, hopefully for my situation, you know, teams will say, you know what, we need better guys that have played, can know that, you know, they prepared in the offseason, know how to prepare and can come in and do what we need them to do right now versus teams that might say, you know what, we're just going to go with what we have or go with young guys, even though we know they're not prepared, we can still use this as a building block. So kind of throw them in the fire a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, it could work. It could work both ways. So, you know, I'm interested to see, you know, how it's going to work out. It's unfortunate from my perspective, some of the young guys, like guys that are undrafted free agents that you go out and see make teams every year and become
right,
good, great players. I can use an example like Gary Brackett. He was an undrafted free agent when we were rookies. you know, imagine if he's in that same situation now, he might not get that same opportunity because of not being in OTAs, not being able to show coaches, you know, that they can go out and perform and make, you know, make plays and make an impact because, you know, the time is cut short. So it could be unfortunate for a lot of those guys.
And do you feel like you're kind of on that level? Are you? Do you feel like you're kind of in that same situation?
Well, no, not really, because at the, you know, at this stage in my career, you know, if a team is familiar with me as a team, knows me, they know what I've done, what I'm capable of doing. So if they want to go in the direction of a veteran player like myself, then it won't be a situation where I have to go out and prove. Like, it won't be a, because there's no real time to prove, you know, with the lockout.
Right.
We, you know, you might have a couple weeks of camp, or the games might get pushed back, and, you know, it was an all-summer thing. You don't have, like, people take for granted, I should say, that, you know, the that time being spent in the film room, you know, those OTA practices, those mini camps, all the things that he's done to gel and mold all summer has been alleviated this year. So some, you know, some part of that will be lost. So as a, like I said, a guy like myself would be able to, who's gone through that, who knows, you know, how the off season works, how, you know, off season program was, is, and, you know, being able to step in and play right now might benefit me versus somebody who, you know, hasn't been through it.
And Cato, you're a former Pro Bowler, you're a Super Bowl champion. At this point in your career, what do you bring to an NFL roster?
Well, I should say a knowledge of the game, you know, being able to go out and make, you know, make big plays, and I think that's what it's all about. When you look at it now in your career, you know, you're not going to make every play, but it's being about making impact plays. In Tampa, we used to call them splash plays, you know, going out and making plays that are going to make a difference, change a ball game. And I think a lot of that comes with knowledge of the game, with experience, you know, seeing things, being able to learn how to study and decipher and break down offenses and break down film and being in the right position at the right time kind of helps you make more plays than you may be capable. You'll see a guy that, you know, 12, 13 years, and be like, man, why the hell is he still doing it at the same high levels? Really, because, oh, he's lost a step in this and that. But he's mentally so far beyond the young guys that can run faster and maybe stronger, but mentally he's so far ahead of the game that he's able to put himself in position to make the plays that, you know, they're making.
We're talking to free agent linebacker, former Super Bowl champion, former Pro Bowler, Cato June. And Cato, during your final couple years in the NFL, a lot of it was, you had a lot of injuries. And talk about how difficult that was for you.
Well, it was tough. I mean, you know, I would say I've had injuries. You know, I think that's just part of it, you know.
Right.
I really only had 1 year that I was, you know, pretty much injured, and that was the year I broke my forearm. The other years, you know, if you look at it, I never really missed games. So that was my whole thing. You know, it's kind of frustrating being out last year because I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm not really injury prone because I never really missed games. Super Bowl ran and played 20 games. The year before that, I played 16 games. You know, like if you go on my, you know, my record, I'm like, okay, I've played 16 games, 16, 16, you know, couple games, might have missed a couple games throughout my career, but with the exception of last year, I said the year before last, when I broke my forearm in training camp, I really wasn't missing games. And that's really, at the end of the day, you know, what matters. It's like, oh, you can go out and who can sustain that 16 game, those 17 weeks. And at the end of the day, you know, look at a guy like Bob Sanders. I mean, you know, one of the great safeties out there, but he hasn't physically been able to sustain, you know, those 16 games because just, you know, injuries have been unfortunate to him. And like I said, for myself, you know, I haven't really had that issue, so to speak, but I guess, you know, 1 year, you know, towards, you know, the latter part of your career, and I saw it happen to other guys as well. So it's not something that it's just, you know, unique to myself, but You know, I see other guys like, man, this guy should be playing somewhere. I think he can still play, still can compete. But, you know, it might be an injury. It might be a team change. It might be a coaching change. And then, you know,
right.
they're kind of, you know, caught in the wind, lost in the wind. And it's unfortunate for veteran players that it's been happening like that the last few years.
And, Cato, we talked about it, but you do a lot of great things in the community. You have a foundation called the Jude Family Foundation. Kind of talk about that. Talk about what you guys do.
Well, our focus really is disadvantaged and inner-city youth. We kind of want to give back to that demographic just because, you know, one, that's the setting and the, you know, the part of town, I should say, that I came from growing up and the schools that I went to. So understanding the adversity that you have to overcome, understanding the resources that aren't there, that aren't provided, that aren't put into those areas and those school districts and those kids that they, you know, they're not necessarily being tended to, you know, by the mass majority. So I would
right.
say that would be the reason why that demographic was chosen by us. Mainly, like I said, I have personal experience and I have, a feeling towards that group. You know, our focus is to kind of show kids the business side of sports. We have a summit that we do that's basically showing kids, you know, that there's more to this sports industry, you know, than actually playing ball. You know, everybody's not going to get the opportunity to go out there and play professional sports, you know, where it be as basketball, baseball, you know, football, soccer, whatever, golf. It could be whatever, you know, sports industry that you're into, but you have to understand that there's a billion-dollar industry associated behind that sport, and you can still be involved in that sporting arena, but just not playing. And I think a lot of it is just being exposed to it. I mean, not knowing is part of it, you know, and I don't think a lot of times people even, you know, especially the kids, they're not exposed to these other arenas that they can, you know, go into. I mean, we're talking about, you know, all the way down to the cameraman, people that cover the games, you know, athletic training, front office jobs. There's a whole industry in the front office side, you know, sports agents. We're talking about all these things that are associated with the billion-dollar industry of sports. You know, they're not necessarily you know, not even thinking about it. So that's one of our focuses in doing that. We also this past Saturday, we put on a free football camp right at my high school, Anacostia High School, here in D.C., which was a great success. I mean, we had 200-plus kids out. You know, a lot of players came out to support from the area as well as guys that I had played with previously. And it was a great success. You know, kids – you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't afford to go to a football camp, you know, and being able to go to the same, you know, pro-style football camp, we got pros coming out, you have guys teaching great football, you know, for free, you know, to me that kind of means something because, you know, most of these kids are not going to be able to afford to go to a camp that costs $100, $200 that they have in the area. There's not nothing wrong with those camps, don't get me wrong, but these kids are not going to be able to go get that opportunity, that same opportunity. And that's kind of, you know, one of our focus is just to give kids the opportunity to do things in the sports world that they may not be, you know, able to do financially or just, you know, just the way that their household runs. And, you know, being able to do that is very fulfilling.
And where can we find information about this foundation?
Oh, the June Family Foundation, you can find us at junefamilyfoundation.org. That's junefamilyfoundation.org. And, you know, all our information is there. We'll be updating it in terms of, you know, how the camp went and all the upcoming events and things that we're doing in the community because, I forgot about our AAU team. We had an AAU basketball team that did really well this year that we started probably 2 years ago. A group of 14 and under, 14 and under now, you know, just little things like that along with the, you know, I would call it the educational side of things, because it's more to it than just putting on camps and having a basketball team,
right,
and doing things like that. It's really about educating them and exposing them to things, and all that goes hand in hand. Don't get me wrong, but exposing them to things that they are not necessarily able to and will never be able to do unless somebody comes back to that area specifically and gives back, and that's our focus.
And Cato, that's a beautiful focus, and you guys are doing some great things in the community. Make sure you keep it up. And Cato June, we do a show. We do a game on the show called Who's Better. I give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Nah, let's play, man.
Better basketball player, LeBron James or Cato June?
Oh, well, come on, man. That's not even a fair. You know Cato June will give LeBron James a business out there, man. That's a joke. LeBron James, man. Come on, man. Give me something realistic, man. Give me something realistic.
Better
man,
store,
six,
Walmart.
260.
Better store, Walmart or Target?
Walmart or Target? Wow. I'm gonna take Target just because, you know. No, I'm lying. I'm taking Walmart. I'm gonna tell you why. I'm going with Walmart. You know, Walmart's not worried about the aesthetics. You know, they get it done. They come out there. They cater to everyone. Plus, they were a sponsor for the Cato June football past weekend, and we really appreciate it. So Walmart wins hands down. Target didn't return our calls, so we're going about that.
Better football city, Indianapolis or Tampa Bay?
Well, come on, man. We won a Super Bowl in Indianapolis when I was there. Of course I'm going to say Indianapolis. Shout out to Naptown, you know, all the people that bleed blue. You know, I think I have more of a support following out there in Indianapolis, so I definitely would say that Naptown Blue, those guys, people are great. They still have a lot of support and a lot of love for me out there. So, you know, you never know. Maybe I'll come out there and do a cameo or something, you know. Maybe have a two-game cameo out there just for old time's sake.
And lastly, better tattoos, Cato June or Dennis Rodman?
Well, see, Dennis Rodman's tattoos are so busy. I don't want to know what they said, but you know when you I won't necessarily do no shirt off, half naked photo shoot like other people do. But I got some nice tattoos. I got some nice ink, and you know exactly what they are and what they mean. So I don't even think it's close. Plus, Rodman got all that extra stuff going on, you know. So if you want to have a tattoo contest, we can go to my tattoo artist and we can see who has the best tattoo. You know, tell Rodman I said that.
Cato, it was nothing but pleasure talking to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. I hope you get on with some team, man, and keep your head up and keep doing what you're doing in the community.
I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cato June, free agent linebacker, and hopefully he can latch on with the team. Let's bring in now actor, one of the stars of Avatar, Mr. James Pitt. James, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm all right. How you been, man?
Doing well. James, let's talk about your role in Avatar. I mean, that was kind of your breakout role. Great movie. How'd you get on with Avatar?
You know, man, I just I went through the normal steps that pretty much any actor goes through when they come to Hollywood. You know, you come here and you pound the streets for a few years, and that doesn't accomplish anything, and then you try a bunch of other stuff, and that doesn't accomplish anything, and you kind of throw up your hands and pray a lot, and then, you know, one day James Cameron gives you a call, man. That's exactly how it happened.
When you read the script, did you realize that this was going to be a great movie?
Yes, but to the degree that it became such, you know, a cultural phenomenon. You know, I don't think anybody could have really honestly forecasted that.
Right.
But you know, when I walked on the set the first day, you know, it was like walking onto a Navy base, man. I mean, just the organizational sort of rhythm, just the scale of everything. You know, this was this was definitely not a, you know, a $2 to $5 million indie film, man. This was huge. So yeah, we knew, but nobody had any idea the scale it would end up being.
And the graphics for this movie was just really just off the charts. I mean, you saw this stuff firsthand. How amazed were you by the graphics that was on Avatar?
I was stunned, man. I mean, when there was a moment when Jim and he was briefing me on you know, kind of what we were going to be doing in this one particular scene. So he walks us over to Video Village, which is any film set has this sort of area where, you know, all the cables from the cameras they lead to, and then you go over and you kind of watch what's going on the camera. And it's usually an area about the size of, say, 2 or 3 cars put together. This was vast. It was like a level of an office building. And just,
wow.
Not exactly cubicles, but something like that. And the computational power that was there, I mean, it would have dwarfed some corporations. I mean, this was pretty amazing stuff, man. And it was so, you know, it was so neat to kind of watch him talk about his film, man, because, you know, I think one of the things that makes him so spectacular is that at his age and his level of performance, he literally goes, here, come on over here and let me show you my movie. he's pulling scenes down, and this is another neat thing about this whole thing. It was all digital, and he was actually pulling scenes down and, you know, showing this the whole thing on like a computer, you know, several computers.
Wow.
And yeah, you'd have thought this guy was a 22-year-old film student. It was really cool.
And you spoke very highly of director James Cameron. Talk about what you learned working with Cameron.
You know, man, it was more of a confirmation, I think, than anything. I've been doing this about 16 years, I guess, and kind of come to a place in just my attitude, my work in general there. If I don't love it, I don't do it, you know. I mean,
right.
We all have things we have to do. We wake up and we go to work in the morning, and, you know, we have difficult things and tedious people and just the normal stuff that we all have to deal with. But I'm an actor because God made me to be an actor, man. And I not only would do it for free, I would pay to do it, you know.
Wow.
And to be able to make a living doing what I do is a total gift from God, man. And I saw that all over him, you know. His kind of talking out of school here, but, you know, his wife called him up at one point on the set, you know, and he was just talking to her like, you know, she was his girlfriend, and they'd been, you know, were in high school. I mean, he was happy. This dude was happy,
right,
dude. And everybody on the that's kind of a cool thing about being a part of the film industry, man. Nobody is there because they got to be there. You know, some kid's father made him get an MBA in college, and now all he can do is show up at the film set every day. It's just not like that.
Right.
People sell everything they have to do this, and you get good. You get good at stuff when you do it because you love it. And
that's
be able
true.
To play on that level and watch these guys work, man. I mean, this was neat. This is really neat. I mean, I'm so honored and, like, still stunned that I got to work on that project.
We're talking to actor James Pitt. James starred in the great movie Avatar. And James, throughout your career, I mean, you work with Jim Hanks, who happens to be the brother of Tom Hanks. You worked with him in a short film. And after that film, you got a lot of praise from Tom Hanks. Talk about that.
Dude, this was definitely, you know, working with James Cameron was amazing. And, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, we finished screening this film at Creative Artists. And my character in this film has a catastrophic brain injury from being shot in the head, or fragmented, wounded in the head by an RPG round in the Battle of Fallujah. We based it on a collection of real people, and anyway, my character can barely talk, speaks with greatly slurred speech. I had long hair, the beard, and he was essentially a homeless guy. And, you know, when I went to the screening for this, you know, I was in a suit, clean cut, haircut, and all this stuff. And I noticed Tom, you know, Tom was there, and even at Creative Arts, you know, he had this crowd of people around him. I wasn't going to bother him, you know. It was cool to see him at a distance. I was just going to, you know, go up to the after party. You know, I might have a moment to see him upstairs. But anyway, so I'm walking by this crowd of people. Dude, this hand reaches through the crowd of people and grabs me, and he goes, "Hey, Jim," and he pulls me in there, and he goes,
"Wow."
I can't actually say the exact words that he said because we're on the air, but he said that was some great acting. And, dude, all the color went out of my face, dude. I mean, you know, come on, you can't write this stuff, you know.
Right.
And his wife Rita Wilson was just spectacularly gracious, and you know, they asked me about my preparation and stuff, and at the party later, yeah, it was. Nothing will ever surpass that.
And now, James, you're about to be a part of the upcoming Bad News Bears movie. Tell us what you can about that project.
You know, I am so stoked to be a part of that, man. I you know, come on, I'm an American kid. I grew up in the 70s, and you know, to you know, you say Bad News Bears, anybody from 76 to now, I mean, kids are still watching that film. You know, to get to play a part in an American icon, man, that's extremely exciting to me. And, you know, I know one of the guys who was on the original cast, and it's funny, he played the part of Loomis. Mike Arnaldi, and he was this tiny little kid. He played like a little sickly kid and all that stuff, and he's this really big guy now, man. He's just a hulking fella, but he's told me so many cool stories from being on that set, man, and yeah, I'm thrilled as punch, man.
Well, are you a baseball fan?
Okay, here's the thing. this always comes up with me. It comes up with me with my best friend constantly because he's he was an amazing player. My two best friends from high school were both baseball players.
Okay.
And they were always, one of them actually wound up playing semi-pro, named Mike Pogue. And he played in the game. He got to play in the show for a short period of time, too. But they were always after me to play baseball. I was a football player. I loved playing football. But I worked in the summertime. I grew up in a farm town. We were cows and peanuts, whatever. And this one year, I said, okay, I'm going to play. One of my other friends was a pitcher, and he was not about to play football. I said, look, if you play football in the fall, I'll play baseball in the summertime. And he's standing there with his Copenhagen rolled up in his sock, standing on the sidelines. The coach wouldn't even put him in because he was afraid he was going to get hurt and all that stuff. And, but he stuck it out the whole year, man. And I forget why I didn't play, man. But I think it had to do with some girl or something like that. And, you know, I went to a few practices and disappeared. And he's never let me live it down to this day. But I love the game, man. And you know, I go to a batting cage periodically just kind of for fun, and I regret it. I played Little League ball. Played Little League ball for several years.
Right.
But I enjoy playing the game more than I know I'm going to get screamed at, but more than I like watching it. I'm a little bit of an Atlanta Braves fan just from growing up in Florida. And, of course, I go to a few Dodger games a year. I really enjoy going. I hate to see them having so much trouble right now, but I think they're going to be fine. You know, they'll weather it.
Right. And, James,
I can't figure out why Manny Ramirez makes so much money, but
he was good for the Dodgers at one point, led them to the playoffs, and I guess that's how he made his money.
Yeah.
You do a lot of – you're another guy who does a lot of great things in the community. You help out individuals who have been estranged from their fathers. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, my organization is in a transition. We had kind of, an unwieldy name. It was called DadIHaveAQuestion.org. We have since shut that down. But we'll still use that as a search term when we start the new thing. I have some people that are working on a new incarnation of that. My primary interest is with fatherless or poorly fathered young people. Man, I never met my father. That's where this comes from. There are so many things that, you know, I had to figure out on my own growing up that, you know, there's a lot that you just miss if you're a kid, you don't have a real close father. You know, how to open a checking account and not hurt yourself with your checking account, how to save a little bit of money, and how to, you know, if you're a girl, how to jack up a car and change a tire, how to, you know, I got started doing this stuff. I participated in a few forums, you know, mostly Christian in nature. I'm a believer. I'm not a freak about it or anything, but I am. Anyway, I would have contact with a few people and kind of see people struggling with stuff, and I'd say, well, look, you don't have to worry about that. This is how that goes. I mean, you know, I'll be 48 here on the 18th, and, you know, I figured a lot of this stuff out just by, you know, wearing a path around the block, and, you know, it doesn't take but a few minutes to have a conversation with somebody and say, no, you don't really want to, you know, I'm not trying to give you moral kind of stuff, but you probably don't want to have sex with somebody in the first 15 minutes you meet them, and, you know, you probably want to be protected if you do, and, you know, some real kind of common sense kind of stuff. Don't get a credit card the first week you're out of high school and run up $20,000 on it. It's just stuff like that. You know, it's so weird. You have conversations with people, and you just say, no, don't do that. Just do this or try a few things. Or if you're going to do it, just be aware this might happen if you do.
Right.
And the doggonest thing, I mean, kids are like, huh, really? Not all the time. Sometimes they do the thing anyway. You know, don't buy a, you know, $12,000 motorcycle and not get an apartment that you can afford. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Really simple stuff. I think. Really, you know, in a lot of ways, kind of boring kind of stuff, but what I would do is I would just sit down and go down a list of things that people would send to the site and questions that they would ask or whatever. And I just kind of sit down and in kind of a boring way like I'm doing right here, just kind of talk about that stuff, you know, just go kind of down a list about these things. And you'd be surprised at people that just really resonate with that stuff, and it seems to... It seems to help, and I also do a lot of just kind of telling people, you know, you're going to be okay. Things are going to be fine. It all does come together. You're not weird because you feel like this. In fact, you're just like everybody else because we all feel weird at one point or another, and
true.
You know, I feel pretty weird right now. So,
and James, where can we find information about you? I know you have a website. Tell us where we can go.
You know, I have a website. It's jimpett.com, but if you just Google me and just put in James Pitt or go to IMDb, that does me a lot of good. Anytime anybody goes to IMDb and they have a look at my work and that kind of stuff, they're people that get paid a lot more than I do that watch these numbers and stuff. And when somebody Googles me or somebody goes to the Avatar site and clicks on my name and checks out me and what I'm doing. I've got a few other, I've got a few other projects coming up too. I've got a political satire film that is absolutely going to be hysterically funny. We've got this amazing writing team. It's called Dick Champion. I play a baseball play, not a baseball player. I play a politician in that who's kind of fed up with the political process in the United States and winds up doing some really kind of cool off-the-wall things. He runs for city council and winds up getting the attention of Sarah Palin and Al Gore and just a few sort of odd bedfellows, but it's going to be hysterically funny. We have another film that I'm doing that's being produced by Rock Point Pictures. And you can find that at rockpointpictures.com or IMDb or IMDb Pro. We're doing a horrifyingly scary film that's set in 1970s Louisiana. And I play a combat veteran that's just come back from Vietnam. And
okay.
It's kind of off, a little bit weird, you know, for a lot of good reasons, I think. And it has a storyline that is absolutely, dude, it's going to be one of the biggest horror films next year, I'm telling you. Huge.
James, we'll definitely be looking out for it. It was a pleasure talking to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with your upcoming projects. Continue to do the great work in the community, man. And again, nothing but the best of luck. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for stopping by, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
James Pitt, actor, one of the stars of Avatar, and he's going to be one of the stars of the Bad News Bears. The movie's coming out. It will be out very, very shortly. We want to thank Cortland Finnegan for stopping by. We want to thank Devin Alexander for stopping by. We want to thank Cato June for stopping by. We want to thank actor James Pitt for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. Hope you had a great night. Hope you enjoyed the show. I enjoyed bringing it to you. See you later. Take care. Bye. Oh,